Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 165. Even though Melissa is coming, recovering from a cold, I forced her to be on the podcast intro.
I give you a warning now that I might cough and it might sound disgusting. I'll try my hardest not to.
And I am not afraid to take that challenge. This podcast is something that I have actually been wanting to do for a long time. And when the opportunity showed up, I actually flew to San Francisco, Lon and I did, just to do this podcast, just for the podcast, just for the day.
Tell me who it is, Chris.
Well, it's Adobe.
Oh, Adobe.
Adobe. No, I love Adobe, and they're really cool. And we've actually been working with them for a while on a new product that they've introduced. And so if you guys are on Creative Cloud and you have, you know, a subscription to it, you guys have access to it. And it's called Adobe Dimension. And believe it or not, Adobe Dimension... the renderer inside of Adobe Dimension is actually V-Ray. And it's really, really cool to do that. The two people that joined us for the podcast, one is Ross McKinney, who's currently sort of heading charge on a lot of the stuff that's going on in Adobe Dimension. And then the other one is Zarona Gee. Now, Melissa, you went to Adobe Max, what was it, a year or 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
And you remember when they first announced Project Felix is what they called it back then?
Yes. Yeah, we were there cheering really loudly. Everyone wondered why.
Yeah. But I believe she was the person that actually presented it at the Adobe Max conference.
Yeah, it was quite a big surprise, I think, for a lot of people. Because essentially, the audience, you know, was Photoshop users and not a huge amount of experience with 3D. And then suddenly they're seeing what looked like 3D renders within kind of a Photoshop-esque application. So it was, a good announcement. We were all very excited about it.
Well, she's really interesting because she knows that the audience or the people that should, that they want to focus on as users of Dimension are the Photoshop people, right?
Yeah, graphic designers.
Designers, stuff like that. And she was a product manager for Photoshop for 10 years. So she's, and that's of course like Adobe's biggest, one of their biggest products,
absolutely,
probably their biggest product. So she really knows that mentality of the user base and how that works. And it's a fascinating conversation. Now, it's not just the fact that V-Ray is the renderer for this thing that's interesting to me. What's interesting to me is the philosophy is how do we make a 3D application super, super, super simple to people that don't necessarily use 3D applications?
Yeah, but also, that would scare a lot of people off.
Right. And they think about it like a Photoshop person would think about it.
Yeah.
And just the intelligence, and I mean that literally the AI intelligence that's built into the Adobe products and into Dimension to make that happen is quite amazing. So it was really cool. I'm really glad we were able to do this podcast. Now, we've got, I should also note that at the end of the podcast that Ross is asking, and Zarona, please, is asking for feedback. So they're very interested in finding out about feedback, and they're also interested in finding out your thoughts about extending a cloud system, a cloud rendering system to Dimension. So really love to hear your feedback on that, and they would love to be able to let people know about that. A couple other things is upcoming podcasts. I know on the one that I did with Vlada, which I know a lot of you guys listen to, we talk a little bit about cloud, but we're going to have a much more in-depth cloud one that's coming out. It's not coming out the following week. That's actually going to be a podcast, another Dan Thron podcast where we talk about Blade Runner.
We'll have to extend the headphones again for next time he comes in. Just to let you know, I put the headphones on when I sat down to do this intro and they were so huge it sort of fell off around my neck. Dan's got big hair.
He's got big hair. He does. He's a big hairy guy. But anyway, we did talk about Blade Runner, so that's going to be coming out the next week. But then after that, we will have Boris on talking about cloud. So just hang tight. We've got some really great episodes coming up. But I will also be recording some new episodes when I go to Vertex.
Oh, and where's that, Christopher?
It's in your homeland.
In London, England.
London, yes. I'm so excited. I haven't been to London since I was a child, so very excited about it.
Really? Has it been that long?
It's been a long time.
Wow.
Yeah. They still drive on the wrong side of the road over there?
Shut up. I'm sure we invented it.
But yeah, very excited to go to go to London and to see, you know, haven't been there in a long time. It'll be really cool. And I'm be doing a talk there. I'm giving one of the keynotes at the Vertex conference. So
it's virtual human focus.
Yeah. It's going to be Tuesday, I believe the 13th.
Uh-huh.
Tuesday the 13th, 9:40 a.m. and so I'm excited about that. I really think it's going to be fun. And there's a lot of other people there. My old friend Scott Ross will be there. Sebastian from Algorithmic will be there.
It's the first one, right?
It's the first one. It's just one day, from what I know. But very excited to do that. So yeah, hopefully if you guys are there, this podcast comes out on the Monday before the talk. So if you guys are early listeners, and if you guys are listening to this late, well, hopefully you guys came to the talk.
I think we might be able to get a recording, actually.
Oh, really?
Talk. Yes.
Ah, yeah. That's scary.
So stay tuned, and we'll hopefully be able to share the link afterwards for those who aren't in London.
Yes, absolutely. Couple other announcements. I think you mentioned that the benchmark was updated, right?
Yeah.
So there's a new version of benchmark?
Yeah, that was a little update of that this week.
Okay, so if you guys are using V-Ray benchmark, you may want to try to do an update and see if your benchmarks have changed much, but I think it's just a little bit of cleaning up that was going on
mm-hmm.
in there.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other one is Total Chaos. Go ahead, Melissa.
Yeah.
You've been working hard on this.
Yes, I have. It's been taking up a lot of time, and it's in May, so we've got a long stretch yet to come.
Yeah.
So this is Chaos Group's own conference.
Mm-hmm.
So we're busy assembling speakers. Mm-hmm. There's loads already announced online. Mm-hmm. So for anyone that's interested, it's chaosgroup.com/totalchaos.
Mm-hmm.
And the schedule's now up, so that's very exciting.
Awesome.
So there's loads of talks over 2 days.
It's in Sofia.
It's in Sofia in
May.
What
are the 2 days? In May?
May 18th and 19th.
Yep.
That's a Friday and a Saturday.
Okay.
So there's 2 days of talks,
mm-hmm.
and there's multiple rooms, so there's loads of them up there. And mm-hmm. it covers everything. We've got, you know, game developers, people that design glass
right.
from Porsche. We've got visual effects artists, of course, developers.
Architecture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, tons. The scope's vast.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something for everyone. And then also there'll be masterclasses, so hands-on workshops as well.
Oh, great. People love those, yeah.
Yeah, if you upgrade your ticket. There's not a ton of places available for that.
Well, sign up early.
Seats. Yeah, so get in there quickly and get your ticket before they all go. There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes, and it's all coming together, and I know it's going to be amazing. And we'll be there.
Yes, we will be there. All of us will be there. So yes. Melissa will be there. I will be there. Sean will be there. I think that's the first time Sean's going to be in Sofia,
yeah.
right?
And David.
David and Long.
Yeah.
Everyone.
The whole team.
Well, this has been very exciting. Thanks so much, guys. And hopefully you guys will really, really enjoy this podcast with Zarana and Ross from Adobe. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
I'll tell you this: when Lon started hinting at the fact that we were working together on something, and I said I can't wait to talk to you guys about what you're doing, and you mentioned Project Felix and just. There's a philosophy about how you guys are approaching 3D that's so radically different from the way that I've approached 3D as a professional visual effects artist who wants every knob and whistle and like I'm operating an F-16 plane as opposed to just like push a button and go. There's a philosophy about that that's fascinating. And I want to sort of have an idea about, you know, when it was Project Felix, right? When it was that thing, what was the motivating factor of making a 3D application inside of Adobe Creative Cloud?
I mean, I think for me, so should I, I'll say I've been at Adobe for a long time, 15 plus years.
Nice.
And I've been I was a product manager on the Photoshop team for a long time.
Oh.
And it was for 10 years or so, and you know, have been pushing Adobe to, you know, work with 3D and our customers, mainly because I see a lot of times that the things that our customers are building and a lot of the problems and inefficiencies that are there in creating certain types of output, you know, images,
mm-hmm.
And how much 3D can benefit their workflows. So it's coming from that perspective of like really working closely with Photoshop customers and understanding their workflows and pain points and being like, God, if you only had like a 3D model of that simple thing that you're doing and being able to rotate it and change the camera perspective.
So what was your perspective from 3D? I mean, what was your knowledge of 3D?
I didn't really have very much knowledge in 3D at
all. You just could see the other dimension.
Plus working with engineers and things like that and having conversations, right? That's my job, right? Really is to bridge customers with engineers and the product together.
Right.
And so I'm always like, it's like this trifecta that I'm always trying to working together to find that happy balance to see like what and who, what technology can benefit whom and what problems we can solve with certain things that I see
right.
in-house. And so I had to learn 3D. I mean, I'm not a pro at 3D, you know,
sure.
But on a high level, I can understand how it can benefit a lot of very common workflows that people are doing day in and day out. And then customers start to ask for more as they start to learn about it. So it started a long time ago, essentially, here. And there's people at the company who really believed in this as well, who kind of pushed
sure.
it forward. And we did some experiments in Photoshop.
Even Photoshop had the ability
exactly.
to import an OBJ file,
exactly.
right? So this was something like, I remember. And Ross, I want to make sure that people know that you're here because we're going to be talking a lot to you towards the end of the podcast when we're seeing the future of this thing going because you're sort of
sure.
taking on the reins of this. But I really want to see some of the original history of it because I was one of those guys who was a 3D guy, right? I worked in Maya, Max, and all the big applications and visual effects. And just the concept of why would you want to import an OBJ file into Photoshop? Didn't really think about it until it made more sense when it was brought into what was being called Project Felix at the
right.
time.
Well, yeah, but you were already looking at it from a 3D person's perspective, right?
Right.
Like you're already way down the tracks in that. And I think being able to look at it from a designer's perspective, Photoshop user's perspective, somebody that needs an introduction to it, like suddenly this is, you know, this opens up a whole new territory. And so you almost have to work the other way, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, that was the original exploration that we had in Photoshop was, you know, just doing simple things like bring in a model and being able to change the camera position of it to output it into a different layer comp or a different render
mm-hmm.
that you would show your client. Right, like it's the same kind of fundamental workflow.
Sure.
But there are definitely limitations that we experienced in building this out. And so this is how kind of Project Felix was birthed in terms of like being able to build something from scratch and being able to leverage all the latest in technologies and hardware advances was really valuable for this particular type of thing that we're doing because of the future, right?
Right,
as we get bigger and bigger with AR and VR and, you know, scenes and different modals and just that kind of the number of assets that people need.
Sure. Well, I think what's interesting, and I want to sort of get into some of it as well, is that as someone who works in 3D or, you know, did a lot of work in 3D, it's really complicated. It's a complicated process, right? The idea of setting up a material, setting up a light, setting up the camera perspective and match moving and all of those things are complicated things that it's, you know, I used to have this joke when someone says, I really like doing rendering. I really want to learn 3D. It's like, yeah, well,
that's
sit down.
It's gonna
take a lot to do this. But what you guys have done, philosophically speaking, at least when I saw it at the beginning of Felix, like, oh, you guys are trying to say take most of that learning curve out of it.
Yeah.
And that is very bold. It's a very bold thing because the fact is you know, like, our users, our Photoshop people, this is your, you know, your main guys, is like, I just need to put the 3D object in the scene.
Yeah.
And that's that's one problem they need to solve. And in order to solve that problem, you've got several things to solve. You've got to match your camera, which is something that they don't need. You suddenly magically said, you don't need to know about that. We'll take care of that for you.
Yeah, thank you, by the way. That's pretty awesome.
And then was like, and don't worry, we'll match your lighting for you. I was like, that was my job. I used to get paid a lot of money to do that. And so, I mean, I'm not saying that this is perfect, but it's like, it's darn good, you know? And, but that, what you've done is you've started to really leverage what has become AI, right? There's a lot of AI involved in this. And I know it's a word that's tossed around very loosely these days.
Yeah.
But how, what's going on here? What explain a workflow that you would imagine some a user and how they would go through that experience of using. I'm going to not call it Dimension because it's the official name, right?
Well, I mean, this comes fundamentally, it's, you know, the need, I think, for realism, right? Like, it's really important for a designer to be able to communicate not only how real a material looks, like how plastic looks, how metal looks, or aluminum, different materials, but also realism in terms of being in context to how a product that they're working on is going to be sold or used, mm-hmm. or how they want to pitch it to a client, like in the environment of where a car to be in actual, you know, in the city where the car is actually going to be sold, as opposed to, you know, in a other scenario. So it's about realism, right? It's about being able to show in context how an object is going to be sold or used or pitched, in a sense.
Right.
So being able to make an object blend into a photographic background simply is something that there was a lot of research in terms of being able to get smarts out of a 2D image and pulling data out of it. So knowing where lights are, knowing where planes are, where vanishing points are, mm-hmm. and helping you get farther, if not 100%, but 90% of the way there in terms of getting your object, again, to seamlessly blend into that image, that background image, that photograph of that perfect place where you want your object to be.
But what does it do? I mean, obviously it has to analyze this image and make enormous amount of assumptions. Right. I mean, I know as a person, I can say that's a road and I assume it's flat and I do these things. Like, how does it do it? I can
jump in here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay.
I mean, so fundamentally what it's doing is it's not algorithm based. It's machine learning based. So there's no algorithm that says it's detecting, you know, floors or walls or surfaces, but the system over time learns where those surfaces are. So we're giving, you know, we have a massive number of images that we use to train an algorithm that is then able to learn what a floor looks like. So when you have an image that has, you know, a grassy field or a tabletop or another surface, it can detect the dominant surface in that image because it's been trained against a large data set and what is and what is not. And once it's trained, it knows where the surface is. It can place the ground plane to match that surface and then place the object on top of it. And so by having, and you know, a user can do this themselves, but they've got to now go in and play with the widgets.
I know, I used to do tracking. So you like, I mean, that's
and it's just magical when you say,
yeah,
drop my image in, upload my image, detects it, places it.
I mean, I've been doing this for a long time where you had to do it all manually and you had to figure all this lensing stuff and everything else. I think it's kind of beautiful that the system has learned, right? And the only way that's going to work, based on what you just described, is through enormous amount of data input, right? Mm-hmm. But you guys have
Thankfully, we have
an enormous amount of data, right?
Yeah.
And
a lot of PhDs.
And a lot of PhDs to make sure that it's well-trained, right? Yeah. And that's kind of an amazing thing because that process of saying, there's your plane, and that's one step. The other one is, and here's
your lights.
The lights. Well, no, not just lights.
Cameras.
Sorry. I'm still on the cameras.
Okay.
And this is your perspective. This is your lens, right? So you have to figure out if it's a wide lens or a long lens or whatever it is, right? And that's a big problem to solve for tracking. I mean, people, that's that's how you cut your teeth in visual effects, is to do that job, right? Mm-hmm. That's a complicated process. And I think that's an amazing thing. But then you guys, like you were just saying a second ago, then you say, I have enough information in this image to pretty much guess what the lighting is. Mm-hmm. And that is also really amazing, because that's pretty much what I was doing. Yeah. My job in visual effects was to put, you know, a robot in a scene and have him lit perfectly and look like they were lit in that environment. Yeah. And back in the day, this is before we had ray tracing that much or anything else, it could take weeks, one person, highly paid, to go in there and place lights to completely integrate the lighting into that scene. And you guys are just doing it all through machine learning, which I think is incredible.
Yeah. And it's really the only way that makes 3D accessible to our user base. Because we are going after the entire Photoshop, Illustrator, After Effects, the entire Creative Cloud community.
Right.
We want a tool that any of them can pick up and use and feel comfortable in it, that looks and feels like tools they're familiar with, that doesn't impose new complexities of 3D to them.
Right.
So, you know, if I'm doing a photo shoot for a CPG company and I have a package and I want to show what that package looks like sitting on a shelf or sitting on the kitchen table, I want to be able to just bring the model in, have the materials look right, have it drop on the table where it's supposed to be, and have the shadows match the shadows of the thing sitting beside it in the photograph.
Right.
And if we can't do that, then you're sitting there tweaking a whole bunch of settings that, by the way, are all interdependent. Right. So you move the ground a little bit and that messes up your lights. Yep. And then you move the shadow. Like, if you're a professional, you know what to do. If you're a novice, like our users are in 3D, you're never going to figure that out. You're going to get frustrated and go do something else. And that's really the opportunity we see, is opening this platform and 3D to the masses. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, I think especially if you consider complicated materials too, like designers won't necessarily know exactly how this glass is going to respond to, you know, or refraction, how light's going to refract inside there. And
I mean,
they don't
know what the index of refraction is.
They don't even know what that is,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we debated for hours on should we change the naming, the vernacular for IOR. Right?
Yeah. Do they want to use a blend or a Phong shader? Like,
yeah,
what is
exactly.
That? Oh my god! No, absolutely. I think I have been, the 3D, a lot of people still think that 3D is just going to be relegated to the Uber GPU or Uber CG nerds, right? Like, these are the guys who just know, you know, algorithms for, I mean, back way, even just, you know, just as I was entering the industry, anyone who was doing lighting actually was mostly computer science degrees, right? Mm-hmm. They were barely artists, mostly computer science, because they had to script their own stuff, et cetera. And what you're saying is, and something I love, is you've basically democratizing the world of 3D and the world of rendering. Right. And that is a beautiful thing, because I think that there is a huge user base of people that could take advantage of a new skill set. Mm-hmm. The only barrier they had was really hard, right? Like I was saying before, this is one of my, you know, I used to work as an architect, right? And I had an architecture firm, and I was the 3D guy there. I was doing all the renderings for them. And everyone would like, oh, I love your renderings. I really want to learn how to do this 3D stuff, because all I'm doing all day is working in CAD and picking up, you know, line drawings and doing construction documents. And I said, well, you can learn it on your own. He goes, here's a workstation. You have to go through the first, you know, 4 hours of tutorials before you can even start on this,
and then you'll forget everything that you learned in that first hour. Yeah,
and I don't necessarily blame them. They're like, oh, well, no, I'm not going to do that.
That was still in the days of like big, thick printed manuals, too.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And so it's like, here's the manual. You go through the first, you know, five chapters of this manual, you'll be ready to start on something. And they wouldn't do it because it was really daunting. Mm-hmm. And what you guys are offering is like, just jump right in.
Yeah.
You know? And that is a really sort of a democratized way of thinking about 3D, because in their mind, like you were just describing, it's like, I have a product I'm trying to sell. It's not been built yet, but I have it as an object or whatever, and then let's explore it in red, let's explore it in green, let's do a Photoshop of it, you know, let's see what it is.
Show different versions of the comp, whether we want, you know, background, photorealistic back, you know, gradient, whatever it is, and have it look right and not have to spend weeks to get that actual
let's say you're going to plan for a photo shoot. It's like, what would it look like in a forest environment? What would it look like in a coffee shop? What would it look like? And you can just get a bunch of stock footage and just say, dump it into all this environment. Right. You know,
that's a big use case for us. It's not only producing final images, it's also angle hunting.
Yeah. You know, if you're a creative director,
if you're a creative director and you're doing a photo shoot on a product, you go to Adobe Stock, grab something that looks similar, place it in the scene, you know, test it out on a bunch of different background images, and you can do that in 20 minutes, get a bunch of mock-ups of what you think the product will look like, hand those off to the photographer. So that's a killer workflow for us.
Right.
And that's not even taking in the full benefits of doing the final image in Dimension.
Right. Well, let's talk about that, because this is obviously something that's important to us. This is why, you know, you guys started talking to us and we started working with you guys. V-Ray is obviously, you know, a pretty high-end ray tracer, right? We've been used in some of the biggest feature films out there, and we've been, you know, the key factor to architectural illustration for the last 20 years. But why did you guys decide to think about using a ray tracer in here?
Well, I'll say that, you know, again, because V-Ray is such a well-known brand, especially in terms of being able to provide photorealistic renderings.
Yeah.
And being able to really, truly democratize 3D and give that power, that, you know, Games of Thrones level rendering to all our designers. Like, to me, that's brilliant, right? Like, to be able to get our designers to get that high quality and not have to go through immense degrees and learning curve to learn certain aspects or learn about rendering. Even like the rendering controls that we give are very minimal intentionally.
Yeah.
Right? Because we want it to be, of course, we're early and we're trying to figure out the balance of control versus a simplicity, right? But but just to get people started and to be able to get them to start understanding like how important this aspect is, and to have that at their fingertips.
Yes.
And their set of tools that they can use.
What I think is interesting is that, obviously, you know, thanks, Long.
Sorry, had an itch.
So one of the things that's interesting is V-Ray has actually over time become a fairly complex renderer, right? It's very rich in features, a lot of controls, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things that we did, and we've introduced, and you guys are one of the first people to sort of like really embrace it, was the app SDK, right? And this is something really that obviously, you know, Boris and the team over in Sophia have been very proud of. Mm-hmm. The fact that you can take V-Ray and you can sort of put it into anything, right? He's actually shown examples where you put it into Chrome, you know, like that kind of stuff. But what's really cool about it is that you guys have full control of V-Ray. You can do anything with App SDK. You guys can make it into the most complex renderer out there, or you know, just like V-Ray and Maya. But you guys seem to have been taking a very strong philosophy of saying, we're going to make things as simple as possible, and still is the full power of V-Ray. Absolutely. At the same time, right?
Yeah.
And that, how do you approach that philosophically? Because this is something I want to learn from you guys. Like, how do you just basically take V-Ray and say, don't worry, we'll take care of this for you?
I'll say really quickly before you go, Ross, is just like, you know, you nailed it in terms of the philosophy of Dimension, right? It's like it's a professional tool. Like the power and the quality of what you get from Dimension is definitely for professionals, but the automation or the simplicity aspect is what you see first, and then you can always drill down to get into more advanced properties.
Right.
And that's generally how we've kind of approached the entire application. You can do things really easily. You can add a material on there. You get great, beautiful materials. You drill down further. You have more controls that you can always edit.
Yeah. And what? Sorry, go ahead, Ross.
Oh, yeah. I was just, what you just described reminded me of a quote I heard recently that said, you know, the definition of product management is to lose the fight against complexity as slowly as possible.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's so true here. And it's part of the reason I came to Adobe to work on this product, because I just love what the team has built. I mean, I came in when the beta was just about to go live. I got to celebrate. I showed up and I got to celebrate the launch of Dimension V1. But I think they took a very conscious approach to setting the right number of features and the right number of knobs and dials to provide enough ability for designers to get the look they want. Mm-hmm. Without, yeah, there's things that are missing for sure. If you're a pro working in CG, you are not going to find all the things you want in Dimension, right. But you're going to be able to get a good result. And that's a critical thing. It's got to be easy to use, and the result has to look professional.
Right.
It can't look like it was easy. It has to look really, really good, but it has to be, and that's so hard.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that's, you know, that's why the big investment in AI and research, that's why like a relentless focus on the product team, making sure that we're not overcomplicating the interface. Yeah. And that, yeah, that's the battle that we're continuing to wage.
And being really laser focused in the workflow. So we have a very narrow but useful workflow for designers. And that's kind of our analogy we used is it's a cupcake of a cake, right? So you have an entire a cake that's delicious. The frosting has the cherry, has the cake piece, and yep. It's delicious and it's perfect. But it's, you know, that there's a larger kind of cake that this came from, this larger batter. So that's kind of how the analogy that we had going forward with Dimension from the very beginning was like, what is the perfect little cupcake that we can deliver to our designers that's useful, it's valuable, it's end-to-end, we provide the capabilities that are required along the way, but don't go anywhere outside of that.
Right.
And that's probably the philosophy we'll continue to have in terms of, because, you know, as you guys mentioned earlier, 3D is huge, right? Lighting is huge. Working with models are huge. Rendering is huge. All of these aspects. But we think about the most narrow workflow. And for us right now, it's pre-visualization of mock-ups and product, right? For visual,
right.
For advertising. And then building out from that.
So that seems like you guys are... At the moment, obviously, I mean, I think there's a lot more potential inside of Dimension compared to that. But it seems like a really great start for you guys, right?
Yeah.
In terms of ideas, like I design a product, I design something. A lot of people want to do advertising for products,
right.
Obviously, and then like mock it up and make it look good. Why do you feel that ray tracing offers better? Better solutions for some of these things, or is it, for example, like the lighting is going to be pretty accurate? I actually, you know, sorry, I'm sort of jumping all over the place because my mind is a little bit of a blur today, but the lighting specifically, I'm actually really curious about this. How are you just generating an HDR environment and saying, my best guess is an HDR that had a light source there.
That was my big aha moment, right?
That's magic.
Because I remember, you know, the early conversations we talk about, we're going to make this thing the simplest 3D app on the planet. I'm like, yes, this is amazing. But actually seeing the prototype and take an image from Adobe Stock, it's a background, it's a lake or environment or whatever, and go, okay, turn it into my light source. And we went, wait, what just happened? Like, how did that happen? And they're like, oh no, we just took this two-dimensional JPEG image and then through machine learning, we turned it into a 360-degree HDRI environment. And I went, oh, holy, you know, like the power suddenly...
Yeah.
Of
it's
being able to
HDR.
Do that.
Yeah,
it's a faux HDR,
but
it's still good enough.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Well, I don't want to say good enough. It's good.
It's
you know
good.
What I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it depends on what, I mean, if you want like 100% reflectivity on something, then, you know, okay, maybe you'll start to see some of the imperfections.
You know what I'm going to call it? I'm going to call it the most, it's a very plausible HDR.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because there's no, I don't, maybe there is a way, but there's no real way to know what's behind a camera. Unless you have like a mirror in the in the image, but you can guess like based on this, I'm guessing there's a really strong light source about 35 degrees behind camera, you know,
yeah.
And you guys are figuring that out, and that's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys do it. I mean, well, I'm assuming it's like we don't. The machine learned and it figured it out on itself.
It's a continuous investment. There are some images that will raise issues.
Yeah. Sure.
But you'll see the algorithms get better and better over time.
Yeah.
And
I mean, is this a process that continues to learn?
It's a continuous investment.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Right. And we're really excited about the first step because you can obviously import an IBL. That's mm-hmm. like the best case scenario, right?
Oh, you can.
You can enter in, yeah.
You can
or you can, if you find some image with particular color scheme that you really like that you want to use for your light source to prototype or mock up a certain environment, you can do so. And that's when we take it and automatically convert it, you know, 2D square image, let's say, to a 360 pano
right.
with some AI smarts in there to determine, you know, what the sky is, what the ground is, what we should consider a light, what we shouldn't consider a light,
right.
some content aware fill, you know, that's a great aspect in terms of understanding what your image contents are as opposed to just taking raw pixel values.
Right.
And then giving you the best case light scenario for that random image that you pull down.
So I know we've sort of hinted at it before and you've mentioned it, but I want to sort of get more deep into it and specifically about deep learning. I mean, Adobe has been getting smarter and smarter about what it's doing. And this is, I got to say, this is over the last 10 years, you know, content aware, smart fills, all this quote unquote smart stuff that it's doing. And it seems that the Dimension came along and was like, we've got plenty of arsenal to attack this problem, mm-hmm. to remove. Basically, the whole point of you guys doing that is to completely remove interface and make decision-making much faster, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm assuming, right?
Absolutely.
Because in Photoshop, it was more like, we're just going to remove a lot of labor for you. I mean, you guys, I think a lot of Photoshop, especially really good Photoshop people, kind of knew how to do things. What you're doing is just saying, don't worry, it's going to be easier now, yeah. right?
Yeah, and we are looking, you know, specifically at those Photoshop workflows, things that become really tedious, mass generation, you know, painting, photo retouching, all these things that right. you know take hours at best, if not days or weeks, and how we can kind of remove some of that so people can ultimately spend time being more creative instead of doing that kind of, you know, chore-type work.
Right.
I spent a lot of time masking out people for illustrations.
Right.
And then I saw the latest, like, click on the person and now
yeah.
they're masked. So I was like, oh.
Yeah.
that would have saved some time. But I'm glad it's out there now. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah. Well, to me, honestly, it was funny because the first time, and this is, I'm dating me, but it goes back to like Photoshop 1 or 2 or whatever. But it was when I basically used a magic wand for the first time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the first time I was like, this magic wand, it'll yeah. select based. Now, I know how it works now. It's actually really simple. But back then, it was like, oh,
I know. I got a selection.
I got a selection, and it's pretty close yeah. to what I need. You know what I mean?
And we're doing something really cool inside of Dimension with the magic wand.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically, the way I describe it, it's a 3D aware magic wand.
Okay.
So we allow you to select subsections of a mesh, so subcomponents that aren't actually
yes.
separate parts.
Like a bottle cap or a
like
label.
Let's say, you know, you're a designer and you get a phone model and it's one mesh, one object,
yes.
right? And you're like, I'm the designer. I don't want it to be just one mesh. I want the back plate to be something different, a different material or something. So at that point, typically you'd have to go to your 3D guy, you,
yeah.
right? And say, can you break this out into two pieces? And
yeah.
so we're trying to think about like how we can leverage the tools and the interactions in applications like Photoshop and Illustrator,
mm-hmm.
for example, the magic wand, and how we can easily allow a designer inside of Dimension to select out different parts of that object, but having more smarts around the 3D aspects of it. So the magic wand is 3D aware in that it knows symmetry, shape, curves, fall off, and finds logical partitions or pieces of that model, so then you can be like, hey, this is a separate chunk, a separate part that I'm going to define so I can add a different material to it.
Yeah.
So I don't have to send that back to the 3D guy.
And honestly speaking, and I have used it, and I was pretty amazed by the process because you guys are using more logic than other processes, right? There are quote-unquote selection tools in programs like Maya or whatever that allow you to like select and then stop after a normal gets beyond this edge, which can work,
yeah.
but it's only going to work based on that one very specific rule,
right.
which is a complicated rule. You guys are going, there's several factors. We'll use all of these
exactly.
to make the best guess. And here's the thing. You guys are guessing. You're guessing about the lighting. You're guessing about the camera. You're guessing about the bottle cap.
Yeah.
And you're getting it 99% right because
right.
you're never going to get to the 100%.
Right.
But that's great because it still saved me a ton of time.
Right, you know? And I didn't need to know about normals. I didn't need to know about any polygon.
You don't even need to know that there is a polygon.
Yeah, you just pick your like magic wand selection. You select it, plus minus to add or subtract from selection, and you know tolerance settings. Those are all very familiar terms to our designer, and then help people partition out different pieces that they can find.
Yeah, I remember that from one of the very very first conversations about Felix was like, there is no polygon.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, you know, it's like the Matrix. There is no spoon.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. What? What is? How? But you guys pulled it off.
This is a philosophy we have, a North Star philosophy, right? No polygons and no UVs, and take that as far as we can in terms of giving people the power of a polygon and UVs.
And there's another thing I want to bring up specifically, because you guys make a lot of products. You do, you know, it's and they're great. There's something, and I'm going to relate it back to this podcast. When I first started doing podcasting, right, and I was like, I want to do some podcast, and I had to figure out how am I going to do it, right? I knew, like, okay, I spoke to David, who's here with us. He's sitting in the back of the room. But I said, David, he's done a few podcasts, and he's like, oh, yeah, you need to get these microphones because they're really great. So I got these microphones, these specific ones. I got a mixing board, et cetera. And then I had to figure out how am I going to record this. Now, I'm already part of Creative Cloud, so I said, I'm going to use Audition because I know it comes with it, right? The thing that happens when I opened up Audition, it took me about 10 to 15 minutes to learn Audition. And it's not necessarily that Audition is simple or anything else. Is that my brain has been trained by Adobe products, and they all have very much... Like, I know when I'm going into Adobe product, I know where everything is, right? Like, it's pretty clear. Even everything that happens in here is very, very clear. Mm-hmm. And so once you're a Photoshop person, you can pick up Dimension or Audition and make it. I'm going to give you one more example just because I think this is the coolest thing when I found this out in Audition. In Audition, there's a thing where you can actually do a graphical representation of your sound wave that's not the normal sound wave. It actually shows you as a gradient color of it. And when there's a pop or a weird thing that happens in there, like from a hiss or a cough or whatever.
Or when Lon hits it with his elbow.
Which I'm going to leave in just for an example.
Yeah. We'll
but I will see that as a graphic representation. There is a Photoshop tool inside of Audition that allows me to select that and basically mask it out.
It's a healing brush.
It's a heal brush inside of an audio program from Photoshop that I completely know how to use, and it removes the sound.
Right.
So doing a visual representation of sound becomes so intuitive because I understand Photoshop.
Right.
And I just love that. There's something really cool about that. And you guys are doing the same thing in Dimension, because you're basically taking what used to be a very complicated tool that people train for years to do and say, we're going to make this the way you know Photoshop. Mm-hmm. What is that philosophy? What is the experience of the UI of Photoshop? Or I'm just using Photoshop because it's the pinnacle example that a lot of people know. What is that UI philosophy that goes on at Adobe that thinks about a product as like that experience?
Well, for Dimension,
For Dimension or for anything, I think all your products, but Dimension definitely follows the line of that product, because I opened Dimension, I didn't open any documents, I didn't know any introduction, I was rendering stuff quickly.
I mean, it's really trying not to have too much UI too,
right?
It's like really trying to think about what are the majority cases of what people are trying to do, and to offer minimal UI as best as possible. But in terms of, if I'm understanding the question correctly, in terms of consistency, you know, that's a really important aspect in our design philosophy, you know, as we move forward. And it's really challenging too, right? Because if you think about consistency, if you think about our flagship tools like Illustrator, Photoshop, I mean, those are fundamentally different as well. And then we have a lot of new modern applications like XD and Dimension, which wants to leverage a lot of new UI paradigms and But at the same time, we want to build upon the expertise that our customers have with Photoshop and Illustrator. So it's finding that right balance of between Photoshop and Illustrator, as well as new modern paradigms and offering better ways of interacting with things, you know.
Right. And you guys are also very, very good at interoperability between packages, yeah. Right? That's another thing that you guys sort of really leverage. You all see this as something that you sort of weave between all right. these different things.
Because nobody really lives in one application. You know, people always, it might be two or three, it might, you know, whatever toolbox you need. What most people these days, designers are not just strictly one, you know, dealing with like print or something or
right.
websites or motion. They have to have access to, or even audio, right? They have to have access to all these different kind of mediums and be able to formulate what it is their vision is for the thing that they want to sell.
Yeah.
So it's really important for our tools to work together to be able to move files, to leverage assets between things. And, you know, that's why things like the CC libraries is so important. That's our one panel that's consistent in all our applications that allows you to share assets and ingredients, if you will, mm-hmm. Between your different projects that you work on, whether it's motion or still or, you know, 3D scenes, et cetera.
Yeah, it's really, really impressive. I mean, honestly, just like on my level, when I'm like, we're editing like a video or something, and I'm able to have the video in Premiere, go into After Effects, do the graphics, pull up a file from Photoshop, just get only one layer from that, update every, and they're all sort of live updating each other. It's right. kind of an amazing thing.
Yeah, and we don't really want to reinvent the wheel, right? Like, yeah. We don't want to build Photoshop inside of Dimension, for example, but there's a lot of, we want to be able to have that, or Illustrator right. vector capabilities, right? Like, we want to be able to leverage our brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. you know, and for what they're good at, and be able to kind of provide the best type of, you know, seamless interaction between the applications.
So let's talk about the future of this, because I think obviously, you know, we talked about how 3D was sort of started to be introduced inside of Photoshop as you know, importing an OBJ file, and now it's sort of graduated to it. I don't want to say graduated. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to have like now it's like a full on 3D package with a modern ray tracing engine and built in and everything, but still keeps that philosophy of a simple package, right? Mm-hmm. Which is really kind of honestly, it's amazing you guys pulled it off to just stick to your guns about this and really great. Where do you see this going from now? I mean, obviously, Ross, you've sort of jumped into this product. You've seen some stuff. You've heard some customers. You've gone through the beta process, right? So, mm-hmm. and now it's, you know, it's gone from Project Felix to Dimension. What have you seen from the user point of view, and where do you see this going at this point?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll start with some examples of what people are doing. I think, you know, we've talked a lot about how this is a different way of approaching 3D, and it's not necessarily a replacement. You're not choosing Dimension over a 3D package that you might have used previously. Often it's opening up 3D to people who couldn't do it before. So it's 3D instead of Photoshop. Instead of going in and retouching, I'm setting my image up in Dimension and I'm bringing it into Photoshop.
Right.
So some examples, I mean, one example I love was we featured an artist in December, a friend of mine named Steve Talkowski. Steve's a CG artist. He has access to any rendering package, any modeling package you could possibly imagine. But, you know, one of the stories he related to me was he did a project for a client. He prepared all these beautiful renders of characters for them to use in a marketing campaign. And what they did with the characters was outside of his control. He handed off the renders of the characters. They put them into their campaign. And what they did was they recomposited those CG characters into the images of the characters into the final product. And they just didn't look right. Like, the shadows didn't look right. If he'd known what they wanted to do, he would have rendered them differently.
Right.
And with Dimension, it's not so much that he's going to use Dimension instead of the tools he uses, but now he can hand off a Dimension file to his client, and this client can do the final, you know, positioning and final rendering themselves. Right. And we're seeing that again and again and again.
You know, so what is that process? Like, explain. Let's say he's the artist and he's created an asset. How does he hand off something to a to so,
So the beautiful thing with Dimension is it's part of Creative Cloud. So anyone who has Creative Cloud has access to Dimension.
Right.
So in his case, he's an artist. He's working for a client. The client, he would package up a Dimension file. He would hand it to the client. The client would open it in Dimension. It may already have some background images inside or not. But the client can, you know, reposition the cameras, swap out the background images, do the final pose that they want, and then click render and get the exact image they want with the exact correct lighting.
Right.
That's an example in that kind of client use case. We're seeing the same thing in the enterprise. Again and again, we go into design teams where 3D tools have been rolled out. And it just doesn't work. You roll out a 3D package to 20 or 30 designers who are using Photoshop or Illustrator. One or two of them figure out how to be somewhat competent, and the rest just—it's just not what they want to do.
Right.
And we see this over and over again. But what you do have in these large enterprises, you do have some 3D expertise. There's, you know, certainly all the manufacturing side is using 3D.
Right.
So there are 3D models out there, and even on a typical, you know, modern design organization, there's someone or some group of people who are doing CG work. They tend to be bottlenecks. It tends to be they're the rendering guy. You go to that person when you need your renders for a concept or for a final product.
So I know the answer already, but just to be clear, you're not necessarily seeing Dimension as someone replacing the 3D guy.
No. In fact, what we do is that 3D guy is no longer the bottleneck. That 3D guy can now create scenes and hand them off to their whole team.
Right.
And their team can work in Photoshop and Illustrator and whatever tool they're comfortable in. And leveraging a template that's been set up for them, they can get a photorealistic render for their products.
Right.
So, you know, as an example, if I'm designing...
So instead of someone standing over your shoulder, like turn it left, turn it right, turn it left, turn it right, they can just do it themselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Nobody likes that job.
No. Yep.
Or even worse, you render it three versions and the creative director says, I want it one more degree to the left. And you go back and you do it again and back and do it again. It's brutal.
Yeah.
This way you just give the creative director the tool. They get the, you know, you've set everything up. You've set up the materials, you set up the lighting, you've set up the background. They can get the exact camera angle they want. They click render, and it's done.
Yeah, the joke when I was in visual effects, a joke about every single article that's ever written about visual effects, if there's a photo of a behind the scenes, it's someone at a desk and someone at their monitor pointing. You know, like that's, it's like, you don't want that. It's like, here, you sit down, you do it, right? So that process is really cool. So you really see it basically handing off the design process, like decision making is much easier in that process.
I mean,
right?
In theory, it's taking time for this to roll out. It's not, you know, this is a change management process as much as it is new technology.
Right.
But you know, we're seeing the promise of it. We're seeing a lot of interest and a lot of different use cases along the same vein that I described.
Okay. So that's what you're seeing. How do you see the evolution of this? Do you see that, like, once people are going to start? Because I've always seen it when you introduce someone to a new process, the first hump is getting to them to go like, oh, okay, yeah, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And the next step is like, well, that's cool, but can I do this? Right? What do you see the next steps in some of these things?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned interop. That's a big topic for us. And there's a lot of work we're doing to, you know, interop with Photoshop, Illustrator, After Effects,
right?
And you'll see more and more features roll out, you know, in those areas, just to streamline the workflows between those tools. Yeah. You know, ideal scenario would be I can live connect my Illustrator and Dimension. So, again, like I'm doing an RFP with a set of ad agencies.
Right.
I can hand out a Dimension file with the 3D model, and I can hand out a corresponding Illustrator file.
Right.
The designers at all of my agency vendors can work in Illustrator, and automatically they get the photoreal representation of what that 2D design looks like in 3D.
Yeah.
And so enabling those types of workflows where it just gets easier and easier to work with the products together, mm-hmm. is probably the biggest opportunity for us to kind of grow
right.
the market.
I think the machine learning angle, what we call Adobe Sensei.
Adobe Sensei.
One data set to rule them all.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that, you know, that is definitely a critical aspect to, you know, our growth and as we move forward to. It's being able to, again, we mentioned this earlier, like taking the tedium out of certain steps, right? And being able to automate to...
What's the next step that you want to make it less tedious?
Well, we definitely want to improve on a lot of the aspects that we already have around match image. So being able to find vanishing point, you know, finding right. multiple planes, finding multiple light sources, you know, be able to expand on the aspects that we have already, adding some more machine learning into selection capabilities.
Okay.
Or even more smarts around the types of images that you're bringing in and being able to better leverage the data that's coming in, whether it's a Photoshop file or Illustrator file, and having it be able to be utilize different aspects of that PSD stack for different things.
Yeah, I think the machine learning portion is what's brilliant, and honestly, it's what's interesting to me is I'm usually a pretty intuitive guy, and I'd really love to think about the future and all that stuff. But every time I hear about stuff that's done in the machine learning side of things, I'm like, oh, that's kind of like I didn't think of it. You know, like there's a different mindset to think about what a machine can learn from. That I think that it's beyond what I'm thinking about right now, and it's something that I'm fascinated by, because I think you guys are doing some really smart stuff to learn the process, right?
And there's some, you know, the content. There's a content side of this story that we haven't really touched on.
Oh around, yeah, go ahead.
You know, around the dimension is, you know, really seen as like an ingestion application. So we want to be able. We don't expect our designers to be building things right from polygons and such. So
yeah, it's not a modeling tool.
Yeah. So the stock component of having the right assets for people to bring in, but of course, those right assets, pretty soon everyone's going to have them, and you're going to want to modify them in way, right? So being able to smartly modify things using artificial intelligence is an area that we're very interested in as well.
So yeah. Similar tools to what you guys are thinking about in terms of your selection, you're going to like smart model, right? Mm-hmm. No. In some
smart
way.
Smart modifiers. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you know, if I have a table, I might
want to like,
make
I want to make it
the
wider.
Legs longer.
Yeah.
And I like just automatically know to grab the four legs, make them longer. You know, they're all symmetrical objects, make them all longer together without doing translation on the entire object.
Mm-hmm. Like currently you can kind of scale things, but things get warped very quickly, right? But
that's okay. Yeah, so that's really smart.
Yeah, there's lots of research going on in different approaches we could take there. But we want to be careful because we don't want to become a modeling package. We think
just want enough to like, you don't, okay. It's back to your example of the bottleneck guy, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to go as like, oh, this table's cool, but the legs are too short, right? Yeah. Now, that's a bottleneck again, because now you got to kick it back, right?
Yeah.
And if being able to do that is the right approach. Mm-hmm. I actually think this is, you know, I worked in, like I said, I used to work in visual effects, and it was always like, there was a pipeline, a very specific pipeline, and you did this one task, and if anything needed to be adjusted that was outside of that task, you had to kick it back to someone else to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. And that is a problem, because basically there was an example of a studio I'm not going to mention and a film I'm not going to mention, but there basically was a process where they're reviewing a shot that was lit and ready for compositing, and they were like, oh, it's great. And he's like, you know what? That Christmas tree, it has five light, you know, Christmas balls. There's too many. It's like, it's too many Christmas balls. Can we take out like five of them or something like that? And it's like, this is like, great, we can do that. It's like, no problem. It's going to take a week. And the reason it's going to take a week, even though it's such a simple concept, is that they had to kick it back and they had to get through this whole run through the entire process of approval back down the pipeline, when it really should have been smart selection, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, done, redo, and you're done, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the idea, is like the decision of what your desire is met is comprehended by the AI, right?
Right.
I think that's really kind of a really good way to do it.
And then in terms of, you know, in terms of the stock and the library and the models and materials and all of that, has that been growing, or have you guys been sort of carefully curating that, or what's the idea there?
Yeah. I think we want it to grow, and we are putting a lot of effort into you know, building the libraries out, in addition to very carefully curating things. So that's one thing good about the content and the models. They all are optimized, and materials and lights are all optimized for the use inside of Dimension. Mm-hmm. And so they're OBJs, but they're all optimized.
But you're also, you can, if, you know, if I made something inside of, you know, ZBrush or whatever, I could bring it into Dimension, right?
Yeah, any OBJ can come into Dimension.
Sure. And Dimension will look at it and we'll say, I'll figure out all the smart selection for you.
Yep.
And
There's some smarts happening when we bring it right. in. Yeah.
And the OBJ is the main translation format that you guys are using at the point?
Currently. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We definitely want to expand on that soon.
Right. Okay.
You know, OBJ is a lowest common denominator. Almost anything can export it. So
for
V1, we just kept it simple.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the intention is over time, obviously, we want to bring in more
files. And let's talk about materials for a little bit. You guys have looked at, like, you know, you guys have looked at the standardization of materials as well. So is there a concept to how you guys think of materials?
Yeah, so we're using MDL as our material specification. So it's NVIDIA spec that will be open source soon.
Right.
That V-Ray supports.
V-Ray supports.
And yeah, we wanted something. We wanted something standards based, and I mean, this is a challenge in the industry. There's no good way to pack models with PBR materials.
Right.
You know, FBX isn't great. OBJ's not, like, none of the formats.
OBJ Glotta, is 20, 30 years old.
Yeah. So
it hasn't changed.
You take modern materials with PBR, and you take these legacy formats, and there's no great solution, but at the very least, we wanted to make sure that as people are passing material data to us, they're passing it in a standard-based way.
Right.
And MDL was,
that was an easy one.
That was an easy one.
Right. Yeah, we support it. I mean, obviously, it's a format that was out there that we looked at, and a lot of people were interested in it. You guys were one of the first people who was like, can we do this? Yes, you can. And so it worked really well. Can you mention, like, what was it like to sort of work with the, I mean, I just because I know some of our guys in Sofia are going to be listening to this and they want to hear, what was it like to work with the guys in Sofia and sort of getting this thing integrated into, because from what I heard, you guys didn't make that many requests. You guys kind of ran with it. Do you know about
Capture.
It?
Adobe Capture.
No. The working with our guys on Chaos Group to get V-Ray inside of it. What was it like to sort of work with that? I don't know how many of you guys work with them. Stefano was the main liaison for sure.
Yeah, in general, like you said, with the SDK, we were able to plug it in. I was involved a little bit when I first joined because, you know, obviously we had some back and forth around, you know, our configuration and just working through some issues, and everything was smooth.
Right.
Yeah, we're very happy working with you guys. You guys have actually been on site a couple of times as well.
Yep.
There's no way we could have gone to market as fast as we did within a year without working with
How long? You guys basically took a rendering engine, integrated to a completely new product and a completely different, new philosophy in a year.
Basically, we were in beta for 1 year, and then we shipped in a year.
Right.
From beginning of development. Zero lines of code,
too. That's awesome. From zero to ship.
Yeah.
It was a very aggressive schedule. And that's why the cupcake, right? The narrow focus and the decisions, some of the decisions around, you know, what is the most important thing for our designers to be able to see the value of how they can get from A to Z much faster with these 3D capabilities, and boom, let's do that.
Yeah.
Best quality.
A lot of people who have used the app SDK have basically said that it's kind of this – it's really nice to be able to have this simple box. But I really think, I really appreciate the fact that you guys took it another level further and basically said, we know all the controls that are coming out of here, and a lot of applications and people want to use those controls, but we're going to tie those all into like a slider that controls a bunch of things at once. Yeah. It's a really smart way of doing things. We're rounding up the corner here. We're just about an hour. This has been fabulous. Thank you for the time. Is there anything else that you guys want to mention about things or feedback? I mean, because a lot of we were talking on the way over to the room here that, you know, you're kind of looking for some ideas from the users about stuff. What are some of the things you're interested in learning about?
I mean, so Obviously, we'd be keen for all of you to try Dimension.
I mean, if you're using Photoshop or Creative Cloud, it's with it. It's free.
Or if the people you work with are. I think that's really the key. Is like think through the workflows of the people you interact with, and you know, are there cases where it would be easier for you to set up a scene and hand off a scene that can then be rendered, rather than doing the rendering yourself? So that's the first ask. Is you know, check it out. And then the second one is, as you're doing that, if there's features or opportunities for us to make the product better, we're always keen to hear that. And in particular, one of the things we're exploring is in addition to V-Ray embedded in Dimension where you can render locally, we're exploring a cloud rendering solution, you know, natively part of the experience. And if anyone would like to try that, that's something that we'll be kicking the tires on soon.
Okay, so you'd like basically like offloading rendering. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think that's a brilliant idea in a sense, you know, a lot of people are sitting there, you know, you're at a product, so if you're on your little laptop, you're not necessarily...
Our users are all on laptops.
Right, your users are all on laptops, right. So just the idea is like, okay...
And old laptops.
And then you're like, and you can do, and it would, you guys are using a progressive rendering, I'm assuming, right? So you can get a rough idea of like, yeah, it looks like that. It's like, you know what? And then just send it off to the cloud and do a final render of some kind. I mean, that's a workflow that I definitely could see a lot of people would work with.
Offload the processing, right? Somewhere to the cloud and let me have my machine to do what I need to do.
Or to work on the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
But I'll just piggyback really quick on what Ross said is if you do get to try out Dimension, you know, there is a really handy feedback widget that we have in the upper right corner of the application that we read everything that comes through there. It actually is connected to uservoice.com, which is our community and our feedback portal for bugs and feature requests. But you know, we are very active on that site. We read all the comments that come through, and that's the easiest way to give us feedback.
Okay. Well, that's really cool. I definitely think our users should check that out. I think this has been a great conversation. I think it's really cool to see that how smart things are getting. Sometimes a little scary to think about, you know, how long things used to take. Yeah. But what I really think people should embrace, and I think you guys are said very eloquently, is this is not necessarily replacing people's jobs. This is just making things simpler for people.
Right.
Removing the tedium, you know?
Giving them more time to be creative, right? Nobody likes spending hours and hours, like, perfecting their masks,
no.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, maybe one crazy person does.
I remember the old days of tracking when you had to put a little square around the tracking area and then another square, and you had to watch that track over time. I mean, that was horrible. You don't have to do that anymore. Don't do that anymore. No, I think machine learning is a brilliant thing, and I think that Adobe has done a really great job of capitalizing on it, making something useful out of it. And Dimension is a great example of that.
Yeah.
So really glad you guys are doing it. I'm really glad that V-Ray could be part of that process and be integrated. Because then you guys don't have to think about the rendering part, because that's actually a really complicated problem.
Absolutely.
Rendering, and you just didn't want to have to do it.
And we wanted the best, right? We want the best for our customers at their fingertips and minimal work.
I really appreciate it. And so it's really cool to be part of it. And that's you know, kind of comes back to what I was saying at the beginning. It's like, that's the reason I wanted to talk to you guys from the beginning. I really want to talk to you about the philosophy of being really smart. And that's that intelligence is the key towards making everyone's creative process more enjoyable. So it's cool. Lonnie, have any other questions?
No, that's it. Thanks, guys.
Oh, this has been great.
Thanks so much,
guys. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.